You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Daniel. Today, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Daniel, chapters 3 and 4.
Two older couples were visiting together when the women walked into the kitchen. One of the husbands said to his pal, he says, "The wife and I were at this really nice restaurant last night." His buddy replied, "Yeah, what's it called?" He says, "Well, that's just it. I can't remember. What's the name of that red flower with all the thorns on it? A rose?" "Yeah," he shouts to his wife. "Hey, Rose, what's the name of that restaurant we went to last night?" Some folks just have a bad memory. And that was Nebuchadnezzar's problem. When Daniel revealed the king's dream and its interpretation, Nebuchadnezzar was impressed. In chapter 2, verse 47, he said to Daniel, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets." To our best estimation, 20 years now elapse between Daniel chapter 2 and chapter 3. And sadly, that was enough time for King Nebuchadnezzar to forget about Daniel's God. He ignored God's predictions and concentrated on his own ambitions. And in chapter 3, rather than bowing to the true God, the king of Babylon sets himself up, makes himself out to be a god. Thus, his memory needs to be refreshed. Chapter 3 begins. "Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon." Now, the plain of Dura was about 6 miles south of ancient Babylon. It's interesting, in 1854, an archaeologist named Julius Opert, he unearthed a pedestal 45 feet square by 20 feet high on which a colossal statue once sat. He believed it to be the base for Nebuchadnezzar's gold image. The statue was 60 cubits high by 6 cubits wide. Using the Babylonian cubit of 21 inches, that measured 105 feet high by 10.5 feet wide. The image was made of gold, probably wood overlaid with gold. The polished gold glistened in the sunshine. It must have been an impressive sight, this colossal statue rising above the plain. It could be seen for miles. One scholar estimates that on its dedication day, 300,000 people gathered in the plain of Dura around this image. And realize its significance. In chapter 2, the Babylonian emperor had seen the image of a man. It represented history's Gentile world empires. God gave Nebuchadnezzar a panoramic overview of history, a really amazing prophecy. The head of gold was Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar himself. The silver torso, the Medes and the Persians who would follow. The abdomen of brass was the Greeks and the legs of iron, the Romans. The image eventually crumbled and gave way to a great mountain which represented God's kingdom. But in defiance of God's message, Nebuchadnezzar duplicates the image in all gold. In essence, he was saying, "I'm not only the head, I'll never be succeeded. My kingdom will rule forever." You see, people made the trip to the plain of Dura because their king was on an ego trip. Now, here's an added note. The average human has a height-to-weight ratio of about 5 to 1. The king's image was 60 cubits by 6 cubits. That's a 10 to 1 ratio, which meant that it was very, very skinny. A possibly plump emperor envisions himself as a tall, gold, and slender person. Another tribute to his vanity, no doubt. Now, though all of chapter 3 is historical, certainly, it's also typological. For Nebuchadnezzar's actions are similar to a world ruler yet to come. We call him the Antichrist. It's interesting, Nebuchadnezzar's image measured 60 by 6 cubits. In the Bible, 7 is the number of perfection. But since man always comes up short of God's perfection, 6, one short of 7, becomes the number of man. Man was created on the sixth day, remember. He works 6 days and then rests on the seventh. Whenever man is idolized, he's measured in sixes. Goliath, the Philistine champion, measured 6 cubits. Solomon's throne had 6 steps and 6 lions on either side of the steps, so that when you saw him, you saw 666. Solomon's yearly allowance of gold was 666 talents. Babylon, which was the fountainhead of idolatry, used the sexagesimal system of measurement rather than our decimal system. Its basic units were the numbers of 6 and 12. Of course, ironically, America also uses the sexagesimal system, at least in some degree. We buy donuts in a dozen. 12 inches make a foot. A clock has 12 hours. And again, it's all symbolic. 6 is the number of man and men, and humans are born worshiping themselves rather than God. The Antichrist will be the ultimate secular humanist. According to Revelation chapter 13, verse 8, his number is, no surprise, 666. Well, like Nebuchadnezzar, he too will erect an image to himself, and he will demand that all the peoples of the earth bow down and worship. The parallels between Revelation 13 and Daniel 3 are more than coincidence. Well, verse 2 tells us, and King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. All the official dignitaries were required to be there. And so the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried out, "To you it is commanded, O peoples and nations, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Nebuchadnezzar's herald makes it clear that worshiping this image isn't optional. If anyone refuses, he'll be fired, literally. And this sounds eerily like Revelation, does it not? Antichrist also has a herald. The false prophet encourages the world to worship his image. Those who don't get executed. Notice, too, the herald calls for all peoples, nations, and languages to unite together around the worship of this image. Recall Nebuchadnezzar's policy of bringing his conquered people back to Babylon and integrating them into Babylonian society. That's what he had tried to do with Daniel and his 3 friends. One way to unify folks is through religion. Give them a common religion to rally around. This has been many a dictator's strategy. It was said of 1942 Germany, "No attempt is made to stamp out faith in the supernatural. The policy is more blasphemous. It is to replace Christ. Religion is now counterfeited rather than dismissed. The Nazis are creating an anti-type of Christianity. They have made their leader their God." And this will be the Antichrist's strategy. He'll be anti-Christ, not anti-God or anti-religion, just anti-Christ. In Revelation 17, in fact, he uses religion to climb to power. Non-biblical religion can be a powerful tool in the devil's hands. And notice, too, Nebuchadnezzar's evil theft of music. Music was created in order for us to worship God. Here Satan steals the music and he uses it as the very signal to fall down before the idol. Satan is aware of music's powerful sway and often uses it in evil ways. Well, verse 7 tells us, "So at that time when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, in the lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews." And this word accused, it means to eat to pieces. It implies a savage accusation. Recall when God enabled Daniel to interpret the king's dream? He upstaged the soothsayers of the royal court. Here, apparently, they remember their defeat and they seek to get even by taking a bite out of Daniel's three friends. And here's the accusation they level against these Hebrews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. That Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, these men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Now here's what had happened. Picture in your mind's eye masses of people stretched across this plain. Then all of a sudden, on cue, this mass of humanity bows their faces into the desert sands, except three lone Hebrews. Talk about sticking out. Their defiance was pretty obvious. And we need to realize that this scene gets repeated every single day. In your office, at school, at the block party, on the tennis team, in the gym. 99% of the people bow to the gods of conformity and convenience and comfort. They bow to the god of cool or hip or why make waves. Very few people dare to stand up for God. Will you stick up for the Lord, even if it means you'll stick out in the crowd? Will you be that guy? When the world looks on, like these Hebrews, we need to stand up, not roll over. Well, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Nebuchadnezzar was boiling with anger. A tyrannical despot doesn't often get disobeyed. Usually, he would have never even given a second chance. Apparently, he liked Daniel, and he liked these Hebrews. Now, if you were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what would you do? I can sort of hear the rationalizing. Hey, this is a sign from God. We got out of this. We're getting a second chance. He's showing us mercy. Hey, we've already made our point. This time, we'll still stand. We'll just kind of hunch over a little bit. I can see these guys trying to rationalize. But not these guys. These guys are determined to obey God. The first two commandments of God's Ten Commandments forbid idolatry. That's why compromise was never on their minds. Now understand, these three Hebrews, they didn't start out to pick a fight. As Christians, we don't want to pick a fight with the world. The fight came to them, and often the fight comes to us. They hadn't logged a protest. They weren't staging a demonstration, but they knew what they wouldn't do. They would never bend. They would never bow to anyone or anything other than the one true God. Realize the Babylonian beef with these Hebrews wasn't that they worshiped their God. It was their refusal to worship Nebuchadnezzar's golden image. You see, sometimes faith is measured by what we're against. This was why Christians were persecuted in ancient Rome. Did you know not a single Christian ever died for loving Jesus? That wasn't the issue. The Romans didn't care if you loved and worshiped Jesus, just as long as you also pledged allegiance to the Caesar. All you had to do was just take a pinch of incense, just toss it into the fire and confess three words, Caesar is Lord. That's all you had to do. But as simple as that was, the Christians refused. For there is only one Lord, and that's Jesus. They would never betray him. And you know, this remains the issue today. Nobody cares if you love Jesus. In fact, most people say they love Jesus, but then they go out and do as they please. But do you love Jesus enough to follow him and obey him exclusively? If you do, suddenly you become a threat to their authority. Real Christianity refuses the gods of this age. We refuse to yield to the gods of any age. We march to a heavenly drumbeat. We please God, not appease men. And this is the stand that was taken here. Well, listen to them in verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. In other words, our minds are made up. Remember in chapter 1, verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart, we're told, that he would not be defiled by the king's food. You see, obedience makes up its mind ahead of time. If you wait until the moment of the trial, the person who waits to decide might just buckle under the pressure. This is why obedience makes up its mind in advance. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12 tells us, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you as some strange thing happened to you. You know what Peter's saying? He's saying there's a fiery furnace in each one of our future. Hey, when it happens, don't think you weren't warned. Don't say this is a strange thing. No, he's telling us in advance. There's a fiery furnace in your future as well. This is why we're all told to prepare for that moment of decision. We all need to purpose in our hearts ahead of time, never to bow to anyone other than our God. Well, verse 17 continues their response. If that is the case, in other words, if we're thrown in the furnace, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. And this is real faith. God will deliver them from Nebuchadnezzar, if not from the fire. Even if they burn, they'll be free from his tyranny. They'll enter their heavenly reward and be taken to a place where he can never touch them again. They will be delivered from the king. God will deliver them either from the fire or through the fire. You know, so often we make the mistake of trusting in a particular outcome that we expect from God, rather than trusting in God and letting him determine the outcome. Our faith is not really in God then, it's in God working in the way we desire. This is why real faith is what I call but if faith. I believe God can cure my cancer, but if he doesn't, for whatever reason, I won't deny him. I believe God will turn my child around or save my marriage, or ease my financial woes, or stop the foreclosure. But even if he doesn't, I won't deny him. That's furnace-facing faith. It's not God who is being tested in our trials. It's us. It's our faith. And real faith cares more about maintaining my witness than in saving my skin. Outcome-only faith isn't real faith. Stuttered Kennedy was a combat chaplain in World War II. He ministered to soldiers on the front lines of France. From the battlefield, he wrote this letter to his 10-year-old son. Son, the first prayer I want you to say for me is not, God, keep Daddy safe, but God, make Daddy brave. And if he has hard things to do, make him strong to do them. Son, life and death don't matter, but right and wrong do. Daddy dead is daddy still, but daddy dishonored before God is something too awful for words. I suppose you would like to put into your prayer a bit about safety too, and mother would like that, I'm sure. Well, put it in afterwards, for it really doesn't matter nearly as much as doing what is right. This is the kind of faith exhibited by these Hebrews. Verse 19 tells us, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Must have popped a blood vessel. His face just got red. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. He turns up the heat, which is what might happen to us in the days ahead. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. In other words, they were all dressed in flammables. Their clothes were going to act like kindling. It was part of the torture. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The fire was so intense that the heat torched the jailers who had escorted the Hebrews up to throw them into the fire. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. But the king gets a surprise. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. And here is the glorious truth. Whenever we stand for Jesus, we never stand alone. He stands with us. When the king gazes into the inferno, he sees a 4th person like unto the Son of God. Who could that be but our Lord Jesus? Yet here's a question. Think about this. The king saw the 4th person, but did the 3 Hebrews? You know, usually when this is pictured, it's like they're all 4 standing there posing for a picture. But maybe not. I mean, the king saw the 4th person, but were the Hebrews aware of him being there? Our text doesn't tell us if the Hebrews were aware of the 4th man or not. And when we go through the fire, Jesus is always with us. But here's the issue. Sometimes we sense his presence, but sometimes we don't. He's with us, but sometimes we don't know it. On occasion, we feel the tight squeeze of the Lord's hand, but on other occasions, we hold on to raw faith. Yet in the darkest moments, the people around us can see him. Even when we can't, people around us can see him. They admire the Lord's strength in us. In the Septuagint, or the Greek version of the Old Testament, there is a section here that doesn't appear in the Hebrew Bible that we're reading tonight. It gives us a vantage point from inside the fire. Let me read you the passage from the Septuagint. It says this. The angel of the Lord smote the flame of the fire out of the oven and made the midst of the furnace as though a wind of dew had gone hissing through it. In other words, the Son of God hollowed out from the surrounding flames a cool spot in the middle of the fire. On the surface, the furnace was intense enough to consume the guards who tossed in the Hebrews. But at the core, where you would expect the fire to burn the hottest, these 3 Hebrews were enjoying a peaceful and a refreshing breeze.
If you spent time in Sunday school at any point in your childhood, you probably learned about Daniel in the lion's den, or his friends surviving being thrown into a fiery furnace. These stories and more are found in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament and are accompanied by more tales of God's miraculous provision and men who refuse to compromise in the face of persecution and even death. Daniel and his friends knew who their Creator was and why he deserved to be worshipped, even when they didn't fully understand his plan. If you found yourself in a situation where you are confronted for your faith, would you follow Daniel's example? Would you stand for God even with an uncertain and dangerous future ahead? God is worthy of that kind of faith, and He won't leave you to fight alone. He'll be right there with you. We're so glad you tuned in to Study Daniel with Pastor Sandy Adams today. If you'd like to hear more from this book or explore other messages from Sandy Adams Radio, visit our website at sandyadams.org. You'll find a list of all the books of the Bible Pastor Sandy has taught from as you scroll down the page, and you're welcome to download and share them with friends and family. We'd also encourage you to get our mobile app to have sound Bible teaching with you wherever you go. That website again is sandyadams.org. Thanks for tuning in today to Sandy Adams Radio.